Hello and welcome to Inside the Auditorium. Our final guest for season three is Valeria Locatelli. Valeria has got a fantastic career, starting within the Big Four, moving into banking and various different products, and now working within the insurance industry. Not only that, she does a lot of work with charities, and also she is in the middle of completing a Master of Science in MS Psychology. Welcome, Valeria. Hello, Valeria. Welcome to Inside the Auditorium. Perhaps you could let our listeners know who you are and what you do.
Thanks, Hazel. Thanks for having me here today. My name is Valeria Locatelli. I'm the Chief Auditor here at Pension Insurance Corporation.
And tell me, you started your career within external audit and, you know, you've worked from sort of banking to insurance. Perhaps you can give us a bit of light on that.
Yes, certainly. I did indeed start my career in external audit. And like many before me, I then made a transition into internal audit that was whilst I was still with Deloitte many years ago. And when I decided to move back into industry, I made a transition into financial services. And at first, I tried to get a good grounding in all aspects of banking. I then moved into the more specialized area of asset management. And now, as you say, I am in bulk purchase, annuity or insurance, pension insurance.
I see that obviously going from banking into insurance is quite different because, you know, with a bank, you're working in quite big matrix teams. How have you found the shift in doing that? And what skills do you think from you working in internal audit into banking has helped moving into insurance?
So I'd start off by saying that, firstly, one needs to have a natural curiosity an interest in a subject matter, because that would automatically lead one to do personal and own research into the topics that are relevant to the industry, reach out to peers in the market, and very much understand what elements of banking apply to, in my case, asset management and then insurance. For me, the attraction was also that asset management has the complexity that you would find in a markets business or in a trading area, but it also has a lot closer client relationship. So it's not as transactional. That's certainly in my view. And now with Pension Insurance Corporation is very much the link with the policyholder. So there is that element of human contact, but at the back of it, there is the complexity of managing the book of liabilities, really.
Sure. And in terms of sort of with insurance now, do you think the regulations are getting more stringent, especially sort of around consumer duty, and are getting a lot stricter now?
I'd say across financial services, regulations have gone stricter over time. I think particularly with bulk purchase annuity, because firms and as a business is a newer business to typical retail banking or even asset management. As the firms get bigger in size, more regulation will apply to their activities. And therefore, you see this trend, which isn't necessarily more regulation for the sector, but is more regulation as proportionate to the level of activities and the risks in the industry. And going back to your earlier question, I think, like me, some peers in the market have made the transition from banking to asset management and then pension insurance for that reason, because we come with the expertise of standards in the market for bigger firms.
Sure. And, you know, one thing that I have seen, you do, you know, you've been very much working as a chief auditor, and you've, you know, been awarded the winner of the 2022 Mary Lou Carrington Award for businesswoman for significant contribution to education, and also been a finalist of the Women in Governance, Risk and Compliance. You know, and how do you sort of juggle your work-life balance?
I think it's all about prioritizing and making sure that a lot of the portfolio is in similar areas, so there is the leverage. So definitely, having worked in audit, compliance and risk, I have that governance grounding, which comes then useful when I work as a trustee for non-profit organizations. And also, I have been a passionate supporter of education and social mobility for many, many years. And I was delighted when that was kind of recognized. And the recognition isn't so much for the person that gets awarded it, it's for those who will come next, who get to see that somebody with no particular background in the context of when I arrived in the UK, originally having been born and studied in Italy, if I can achieve or other awards winner can achieve, then others that will come later will be inspired to achieve and fulfill their potential, which is really important to me, to facilitating that, I mean.
And I must congratulate you as well. You've become chairman for the Voluntary Action Southwestern Sussex for, I know that this is really important for you, but maybe you could explain as well how, especially with a lot of NEDs and people that I speak to have become chief auditors and now that are sort of working with lots of different audit committees. Perhaps you could let me know how sort of being an internal audit has helped that, or, you know, why is it important, you know, to do this work with these charities to then obviously get other NED roles going forward in the future?
Yeah, so first of all, I mean, it's really important for me to give back to the community. And for many years, I did that in the City of London because it's an environment that has given me so much. And now I'm starting to give back into my local community, which is Surrey. And voluntary actions are organizations that promote and actively support the voluntary sector, which is also known as the third sector. And its importance is paramount in this day and age because of the cost of living crisis, because of the struggles in the NHS and all resources in local governments, as that may be. So it was an easy choice to make when the opportunity came about. Auditors operate at the heart of governance of organizations. And so from a relatively early stage in their career, witness and become proficient in governance matters, board proceedings, committee meetings, where a pragmatic approach may need to be applied. I thought these skills would be quite transferable, which they were. Also, the feedback I received as I was going through this process was also around conflict management, which, again, as an auditor, you deal with conflict all the time. And by conflict, I don't necessarily mean anything negative, but differences of opinions across your stakeholder pool and individuals that you operate and collaborate with. And so the ability to manage a board was seen as a clear possibility for somebody that had that experience kind of over time.
Sure. Okay. And I noticed that obviously you're also doing an MSc in neuroscience degree, and you've got an MSc in psychology, which you've recently been doing. MSc in applied neuroscience, yes. Can you tell us sort of what made you decide to do that for your career, and how that's helping you bit within internal audit, if at all?
I came across neuroscience because I've been blessed in my career to have had some really good and valuable leadership training. And what I realized during one of these programs is that a lot of the theories and methods that I was presented with and asked to apply were grounded in neuroscience. And so my first MSc was pure applied neuroscience, which is much more about the physiology and biochemistry of the brain. And it's been hugely helpful for me to understand how the chemicals and electrical pathways in the brain impact your ability to operate effectively. And I specialized in mood disorders and schizophrenia. Whereas now I'm doing a second MSc to become a fully qualified psychologist. I mean, it's not going to be just the MSc, but we work longer. A lot of people have 2, 3, 4 careers. And for me, it was kind of building what my next chapter might be like in 5 to 10 years' time. And moving from a place where when I graduated, I had to have a job because I had to support myself financially. And the job that was going at the time was auditing. I've really enjoyed it. I would highly recommend it. But at the same time, I have discovered my passion is to help people, work with people, and help them achieve their best potential. And so it was a way to do a little bit of both. And interestingly, one of the modules that has captured my attention the most has been social psychology, which is all about how people interact. And it's fascinating. The application of that knowledge into my everyday environment is extremely valuable, even though, like all things, just because you know something, it doesn't mean that you automatically become proficient at it. It just means, frankly, that sometimes when I have a bad interaction, then I'm more aware of what might have gone wrong. And so my self-reflections are more insightful in terms of what change in the future.
And we've spoken about, you know, I don't know how you've got enough hours in the day. How do you manage sort of being in such a senior role and navigate your personal life, you know, your charity work and doing a degree at the same time?
So prioritization, which I mentioned earlier, is definitely my top tool. And until one tries it, one doesn't understand the power of prioritization. Even not looking at social media, if that's what one does, for half an hour every day gives you 30 minutes back. And there's a lot that one can achieve in 30 minutes. I'm also quite disciplined in which nights I can do some extra work, which nights I'm going to dedicate to my chairman role, which nights I'm going to dedicate to my studies. And then, of course, things happen in the week, but I always make sure that I catch up. That's kind of very important. And I guess finally, I would say I stay away from things that I'm not good at, and I tend to focus on the things that I'm naturally good at. So for example, a lot of studying comes easy to me because I have a really, really good memory. So often I read something once and I remember it really well. But equally, there are things that I'm not good at and I just don't I just don't go anywhere near them, which again, it sounds like very simple, but I've come across a lot of people who try to do what everybody else does, and it's not necessarily suitable for them, whereas I tend to follow my own path.
Do you think then, you know, as more, you know, new people that are coming into the business, do you think it's still important for, you know, people, you know, to have mentors throughout, and it is just as easy to learn and pick up new things that you're not good at? Or
I think being able to flex, it's very important, because ultimately, both in our work life and in our personal life, to achieve our outcomes and the things that we set out to achieve, we need to interact with others and also with the environment that is around us. So we need to be able to read emotional cues. We need to be able to understand the blockers in the environment. We need to be able to understand whether these obstacles can be removed partially or fully, or whether they're there, and so how we work around them. So learning to be flexible and to adapt, I think it's really, really important. At the same time, if something is, I'm a terrible singer, right? So I love singing, but I can only sing on the same tone. And as a girl, I used to be told at church not to sing. I was allowed to sit in the choir, but I couldn't sing because I was terrible. And so there are things in life that there's just no point investing too much effort in, because you're never going to be able to enjoy it. It's the stress of trying to do them to any sort of level of proficiency is just too hard. And I'm quite lucky that I've never found that my inability to be good at certain things was a failure as such. I just accepted that I was better at other things, and I just worked on them more.
Sure. Number one is the local pubs definitely banned me from karaoke, mm-hmm. especially after a few glasses of wine. But I also found that I took up tennis in COVID. And I know it's a bit different, but it's something that I particularly really do struggle with. After now sort of 2-3 years, I'm still battling with it, and I think just some things you can do and some things that you can't. Just going back to sort of banking and insurance, because I notice nowadays, especially quite a lot of CEOs that have been working in banking are going to insurance organisations, and notoriously insurance companies, apart from sort of Euro Aviva and Phoenix and some others, but you know, some of the internal audit teams are quite small. Do you think that people or insurance companies are more aware that the banks may be more regulated now, that are different, you know, and will look to sort of bring out internal audit teams and make them larger?
It's a good question. I think the trend of growing audit functions in insurance and pension insurance more specifically, it's all related to the risks in the business and in the environment and how the organization sizes up for that. But to me, it also goes back to the size of the organization. So if I think about the large international or even just UK-based retail bank, because of their huge presence in terms of the retail market, they've always needed more auditors because there was more to check. And so as the insurance market and options of insurances increases, then again, for the auditors, there are more things to check. But that is an evolution that is not just headcount, it's also skill set mm-hmm. and talent. And if I think about the teams that I have managed in the last 10 years and those that I'm still in touch with, as well as my current team, auditors are constantly and continuously upskilling. There's always something new that we need to learn about. It could be that you have a really good understanding of liquidity, but now you need to get into the nitty-gritty of solvency specifically. It could be that you understand everything about fixed income, and now you need to learn about real estate assets or credit. And so it's an ongoing trend, I'd say.
Sure. So really then, because especially within your career as well, right, you've moved from different, although within banking, into different product areas. So I feel that you're saying that it's quite important to move around and get diversity. Yeah. And you know, with regards to that as well, I noticed in that you started people management quite early. And I think that that's, you know, to have those soft skills or be able to do that is quite, you know, not everybody is a good manager, and people want to become, you know, feel that they want to do this route and they're not very good at it, to be quite frank. What do you think's helped you in terms of, you know, being able to be a good people manager and help people?
I absolutely agree with you. And I don't think everybody is suited to people management, which is different from leadership. And not everybody is suited to being a technician. And I think when I manage teams, one of the things that I always say is a decision that you, the individual I'm talking to, need to make early on in your career is which path you want to go down. Because there are very few individuals that I have worked with that had the ability to be both a highly technical specialist and a really good people manager. Often the skills required are different. In terms of me and people management, first of all, I enjoy it. I mentioned this before. If you do things that you enjoy, you tend to dedicate your time to them. I'm naturally a high EQ individual, which means that I tend to be able to kind of empathize with people and understand where their skills are best put at work in a given situation. And also, I've always operated in the context of we need to work, we as in my team, we need to work as a team. It doesn't matter if I'm great, if everybody else in the team either is not enjoying the role or is not learning anything. Whereas if we operate as a well-oiled machine with cogs spinning and connecting, the output we get is always better. And then finally, I'd say, because I have never been shy with asking feedback, I've always built on what I could do better. And that naturally helps you, if you like, develop. And then when you see others that are going down the same rabbit hole that you went down some time before, you want to help them and to say, actually, if you do this might happen. Is that what you are trying to achieve? And again, in those instances where somebody has done that for me, I've been really grateful.
Because also as well, with your staff that you have, you could have some future leaders within those teams.
Oh, yes.
I'm just curious to understand, when you're asking for feedback, are you asking for feedback from from sort of all levels, from your team to your stakeholders to your peers? You know, is it, you know, how important is that for you?
So I do a range of things. All of the things that you've mentioned, whether formally or informally, depending as to whether there's a particular things that has occurred or whether it's kind of year end. But I also tend to, I have a trusted group of people that I go to, that I ask for advice when I'm not sure about something. And these are the people that I have cultivated over many years and that I trust to give me the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I was recently, in the last 1 or 2 years, I had a particularly difficult report to write, and I went to somebody in my team who I really trust and said, "Oh, can you please read it for me and tell me your feedback?" And a few hours later, they said, "Do you really want the feedback? Because you completely need to rewrite this thing." And I laughed and I said, "Yes, I do want the feedback. Otherwise, I wouldn't have come to you. You know, if I want to hear everything is great, I go to somebody else." But I think that's, for me, that's really important in my personal, in my personal growth. And some of the things I've been the most successful in have been things that I have been advised to do. I thought it was a crazy notion, and I did it to prove the individual wrong, and obviously they were right. So it kind of works sometimes.
Yeah. Well, that's good, right? And also, I think it also gives people the opportunity that perhaps aren't as senior as you to be able to learn from, you know, the way that you're doing things. And I do feel, especially as, you know, even in terms of how we work here and how our different systems work and how people, I think, probably that are newer to work, they work a lot smarter in terms of their technologies and how just to, you know, maneuver around that. So, and with regards to sort of teams as well, within insurance, do you think that, you know, with data analytics and, you know, technology, do you think that the insurance companies do need to sort of come up the curb with that, and how helpful that will be?
A lot of the chief auditors I speak to have some sort of AI capability. Because data is everywhere nowadays, and ChatGPT, Copilot, you know, as soon as you open your phone or your computer, somebody is suggesting something to you without you even having to say anything. The challenge is always the quality of the data and then the analysis of the data. What does it tell me? In the good old days, it would be your Excel analytics of kind of payments, and you had all these double payments, and then there was always a reason why it wasn't a double payment. So I think whereas the technology is there, and by and large a lot of audit function are making use of it in some shape or form, I think the quality of the analysis and the validity of it varies depending on the quality of the underlying data that is being analyzed. So there's definitely more to be done in the space. And then the second challenge for me is also the efficiency point, which you mentioned, is where do we deploy data so that we are more efficient? Because there isn't a lot of point in deploying data, which can be quite time consuming in areas where we're not going to get much out of it or any better insights.
Sure.
And again, I think these are things that all audit functions are still evolving.
Yeah. And also as well, I do find that, you know, some organisations that don't even, you know, they're asking for people to have data analytics or AI or, you know, to be cloud-based, and they don't actually have those tools within the company. And you're trying to, you know, they're saying, right, well, you've got to have data analytics experience, for example, and they're sort of saying, well, why? What data analytics am I doing? Well, you know, nothing really at the moment. It's something, you know, a nice skill for them to have. Maybe you might do a project. And I don't think, you know, if you want to retain staff, I think you have to have a good, clear vision of why you want those particular skill sets and how you're going to use them, because ultimately people are just going to get bored and want to leave, right? So although we do need it to start, I think people just need to be a bit more clear and, you know, precise about it.
Yes, and one always owns one's development, so that's the starting point, and it goes back to the what do you enjoy and what are you interested in. And I would say in the last five or six audit functions that I've worked in, data was always present in some shape or form in terms of skills. And I don't think auditors can now be successful without any basic minimum understanding of data and how to analyze it. Sure. And certainly, we go back to the point that you were making around being pigeonholed. The more minimum basic skill set auditors have, the more likely it is that I will have varied career, because they will be able to repurpose themselves into different sectors.
Sure. So, and do you think there are any particular skill sets or product areas that are not maybe as popular now, where or skill sets that you think people should be more aware, whether that's sort of technology or advice to be able to do integrated audits, maybe, I don't know, people getting their CISA or?
I'd say at an individual level, I'd say there are kind of three things. The technical skills, one has to be clear as to which one wants to pursue. So if one is doing the IMC, one cannot do at the same time, the ACCA. So having a plan of what one is doing now and for what purpose in the future, I think is very important. And technical skills, I always find they're generally easier to acquire either via on-the-job learning or kind of professional courses or qualifications. There is then the soft skills, and not everybody is interested in soft skills, but again, to operate successfully in what is undoubtedly a complex environment, soft skills are needed, and so having a curriculum of your conflict management, presentation skills, debating, report writing, messaging, etc., I think are all fundamental nowadays, particularly as auditors progress in their career. They no longer have the opportunity to have day-to-day relationships with the stakeholders. Sometimes it might be three committees a year. So three shots at getting an opinion and a message across to make, to facilitate or enable a change. And then the final area to me is kind of the looking ahead, which is where you are with kind of your IA, new regulations, emergency trends. Kind of how can we be more efficient from an internal audit perspective? We have new standards and everybody's grappling with kind of how do we implement them in the best way, which is where kind of the efficiency comes from. What are the things that add value? What are the things that actually I'm just going to stick to the minimum standards? So, and that, I think the latter is one of the most difficult bits in my experience for auditors to become proficient as, because a lot of audit functions are so regulated and regimented that auditors often are given a book and told to follow the book. And so it does take some personal curiosity, accountability, and proactiveness to kind of get out of your comfort zone and say, I'm going to read the FT today. I'm going to look at the news, or interest rates have gone up. What does it really mean for my organization? The cost of credit has gone up. What does it mean for my role or the areas that I look at? And but it's extremely important.
Sure. And do you think you can teach, even when we're giving interview prep and when we're talking to candidates, technical skills, you've either got it or not, how it's asked, how do you deliver? But soft skills, do you think that that's something that can be taught or?
To an extent. I mean, again, going back to neuroscience, there are hundreds of techniques that one can apply. So if one doesn't particularly like presenting, plenty of techniques that one can utilize to kind of get to a decent standard and for that not to be a limiting factor in their career. But it's definitely not as easy. And also, it depends on an individual's natural preferences. If somebody is extreme, for example, on the analytical side and very low on the practical side, it's going to be much more difficult for them to move into the other space than for somebody who's kind of more or less in the middle.
Yeah. Do you think this is sort of what makes things, you know, because of the role of a chief auditor and you've really got to, you've got to be all to everybody to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. And you know, with the, you know, for women to be boardroom ready and to have those skill sets, you know, would you think younger people coming into internal audit now, you know, what could they be doing to think about that next move into getting into senior leadership roles? Because I feel that it's, especially some of the functions that I've done, is that, you know, some people aren't ready, and, you know, perhaps trying to learn it at this time later on when you're already in those senior leadership roles, what could perhaps we, how could we be helping, yeah, the next generation coming up into these positions?
I can only talk from my experience, but what has really helped me is two or three things. So somebody said to me once, never think about the next job, but think about the one after. Because what you do today will impact your ability to have that job after, particularly as some development avenues take a number of years, not just kind of months. And so as I started to focus on that, then the idea is, oh, maybe I could do this master, maybe it's going to help me in the future. What could I do with it? And it's really, really, really powerful. So for those individuals that have wanted to move from a head of audit to a chief auditor role, I've always given that task. Okay, so if you want a chief auditor role, what are the steps you need to take today to be ready in five you know, years time? Because it's not a journey that takes a number of months. The second thing has definitely been gone and talked to senior people on career advice. So at a point in my career, I was debating whether I wanted to stay in audit and in finance. I think at the time I was already at managerial level, and this senior person in the finance department quite rightly told me that if I'd wanted to move into a finance role, I would have had to take a pay cut and a role cut, for the sake of a better expression, in the sense that individuals more junior than me in finance had a lot more expertise in finance and had kind of much larger teams, 30, 40 people. And so, you know, having thought about it, I decided actually this is like an avenue that I'm willing to take. And so even when we want to do things, knowing early on that they're not a real possibility, it's again really powerful, because it helps us not to focus on things that we've not come to anything, and then refocus our energy and attention to something that is, however, possible. And then finally, I go back to neuroscience, really understanding what I enjoy in terms of my personal and work environment has been extremely powerful in understanding what type of jobs are right for me, which... I took a role in the compliance department some time ago, and again, it had all of the characteristics of a job that I would enjoy.
Sure. And did you do that through a career coach, or is that because you've done your degrees quite late as well, though, haven't you? So, you know, you know this just because of your interest. That's what I, you know, if our listeners were actually going to think about that, how would you suggest for them to go about and to get this sort of advice?
Yes, so this particular psychometric was through a year-long leadership training that I did in a previous life, which was really groundbreaking in terms of my own personal development. It was done through a professional coach, but all of these techniques are kind of readily available, and often the same thing is available in a shorter version online for free, right, if you like. Yeah. So it's just a case of, you know, in my case, I was part of this leadership program. In other organizations, I've just spoken to the HR department and said, these are the sort of things that I think my team would benefit from. How can we do it? And it's always gone kind of really well. And for me, it's all about the team and how we work together. Other leaders might have a different angle to explore. And the beauty of these tools is that they allow you to go down whatever avenue you need to. And you asked me earlier whether the new talent of auditors coming through should focus on soft skills and how difficult that is. Again, some of these psychometrics allow you to understand whether you do want to do that or otherwise. I remember in a training course, somebody, a facilitator said, oh, we one time had somebody that said, I'm trying to understand whether I care that I don't care, and whether that's good or bad. And so that's the power of these things, and that's what I enjoy about neuroscience. There is no right or wrong, right? If you are an extrovert, it's not better or worse than if you're an introvert. It's just about understanding your natural preference and how you deploy to your advantage so that you're more effective.
I do. I can't resonate with this enough. We do. We had Gabby Beaver on the podcast that basically said you've got to be CEO of your own career, right?
And, exactly.
It's so true. There's so many people that we speak to that are floating, that are just going, you know, from one role to the other. It's just the same role within a different bank. Okay, well, you may get some sort of minimal pay rise. Look, I understand some people just want to do that because they don't, you know, they might not like their manager or what have you. But I think more so now, especially in the last few years, it's you really got to have a good understanding and a grounding of, you know, what career you want to do. Because I also think what's quite important, when years ago, people would just stay in that one bank and stay in that one insurance company or whatever for years and years and years. And especially with these fintechs coming up the curb and all this new technology and what have you, you know, they are becoming quite competitive. So people don't tend to stay in those jobs or in those banks for or that company for such a long time now. Is there anything, just finishing off now, is there anything you would like to give our listeners to take away? You know, any particular thing that you've been taught that's resonated with you over the years that, you know, you keep adapting and applying?
Yes, actually, and I'd like to build on your analogy of being the CEO of your own career. By definition, a CEO is a leader. Right. And a leader is supported by lots of different individuals, personalities, styles, activities to achieve their vision for an organization. And so one of the things that I've been advised to do and I've always followed is look at lots of leaders, because you will not be able to become exactly the same as a leader you really like, but look at lots of different leaders and take a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of something else, and then you will form your own leadership. And And then it is quite empowering because you're not trying to be somebody else, but at the same time, you can then go to somebody and say, you're really, really good at this. I'm not. Can you tell me how you do it? Why does it come easy to you? And if it doesn't, kind of how do you prepare? And I often find that although it can be daunting to go and talk to people you don't know, most people would give you their time because particularly in the auditing community, we're all interested in developing the talent that is coming through because we all care about this profession.
Mm. I think as well, it's about fear, isn't it? And rejection. And yeah. Especially because, you know, in the internal audit industry, people are more introverted. It's not really a natural thing. You know, if you were standing in a pub and just go up to and speak to people yeah. naturally, but you know, especially I know with the IIA and the support, you know, a lot more functions, round tables are happening now, and hopefully this will help our industry. Well, Valeria, thank you so much for your time today. It's been very interesting to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye bye.